hell out of me. My hand clutched at my chest. Graham stood in the doorway, leaning casually against one side.
You were so engrossed in your snooping that you didn't hear me come in.
I wasn't snooping. Graham arched an eyebrow. I wasn't.
So I must have left the drawer wide open this morning?
I folded my arms over my chest. Guess so. He chuckled and walked to the table, sliding the drawer closed.
Well, if I left it open this morning and you weren't snooping, then you probably don't want to know what's in the bag.
Not in the least.
Shame.
Why, what's in the bag?
Kiss me.
Will you tell me what's in the bag? He wrapped his arms around my waist.
I'll show you what's in the bag. Now greet me properly.
I rolled my eyes as if it wasn't something I wanted to do every time I looked at his ridiculously handsome face. Then I planted a chaste kiss on his lips. But before I could pull away, he had a handful of my hair in his hand and didn't let go until he kissed me properly.
Wouldn't have taken you for a snooper.
He mumbled against my lips. I pulled my head back and looked at him. I'm not, usually, but I can't figure you out.
What's there to figure out?
Slapstick comedy or Civil War flicks? The same type of person doesn't usually have both. Graham looked amused.
I like both.
What's with the 3 quarts of Nesquik? Strawberry, too.
I like it.
Obviously.
And so does Blackie.
You feed your dog quick?
I do.
See, that's the thing. Mr. Big Prick doesn't have a cute little dog, and he definitely doesn't share strawberry milk with it.
Maybe I'm not Mr. Big Prick like you think.
He slid my hand down to his crotch.
Maybe I just have a big prick, but I'm not really the prick you imagine.
What's your secretary's name?
Elaine.
Eliza. She just told it to you this morning. I was there.
I'm busy. It's hard to find a good secretary to stay very long.
Only when you're a big prick.
So maybe I am a big prick, but I'm not to you, am I?
I sighed. So what's in the bag already?
What if I told you it was rope because I wanted to tie you up?
I thought about it for a second, then shrugged. I think I could get into that. He blew out a frustrated whoosh of air.
Damn. I should have bought rope.
That would entail a trip to the hardware store. I'm guessing you're not a big DIY-yourself kind of guy and don't even know where one is.
How about one of those sex toy balls that strap around your face so you can't talk? What if I told you that was in the bag, Big Mouth?
A ball gag?
You knew what I was talking about fast enough.
I leaned in and whispered, I have Caddyshack, Happy Gilmore, and Anchorman too. But instead of boring Civil War movies, I might have a few movies of a different genre. He groaned.
Are you telling me you have a porn stash?
Maybe.
You couldn't be more perfect if I'd made you myself.
Thought you didn't like my wise-ass mouth.
Your wise-ass mouth makes me hard, and later I'm going to fuck that mouth. You're right, I don't know where the damn hardware store is, but I'm resourceful, and I'm sure I can find something to secure your arms and legs while I have at it.
He was only teasing, but listening to him talk about tying me up had me aroused, and Graham saw it on my face.
Fuck, Soraya.
Yes, please. That was all he needed. It wasn't until hours later that I finally learned what was inside the bag. The lingerie he had bought at Bergdorf's the afternoon he went to pay for my dress for the gala. I didn't get to wear it that night, but I did get a promise from Graham that the drawer would be filled with more interesting things for my next snooping session. The next morning, I woke to a fully dressed Graham stroking my cheek.
My eyes fluttered open.
Hey, did I oversleep?
No, I'm early. I have a busy day and wanted to get an early start.
I stretched my arms up over my head, causing the sheet to slip down and expose my bare breasts. The morning chill made my nipples instantly hard.
Don't do that. I'll never leave.
Graham rubbed two fingers over one of the stiff peaks.
Soraya?
He warned. What? That feels good. Don't touch if you don't want my reaction. He shook his head.
Will you stay with me tonight again? I'm going to be late, but I'd love to come home to this beautiful sight in my bed.
You have to work late? I looked out the bedroom window. It's not even light yet, and you're already planning on working until after it's dark?
No. I need to go by the wake tonight. There's a session from 7 to 9 this evening, so I'll probably stay at the office until then.
Oh.
Will you be here when I come home?
Why don't I go with you tonight? To the funeral parlor, you shouldn't have to do it alone. I can't imagine it will be pleasant. Your ex-best friend whose company you were trying to buy and his grieving wife who also happens to be your ex-girlfriend? You could use some company.
You'd do that for me?
Of course. Although, it seems to be a thing for me lately. Funerals and dates. Graham chuckled and kissed me gently.
I'll pick you up at 6:30. And thank you.
After he left, I lay in bed for a little while before getting up. I couldn't stop thinking. Tonight was going to be interesting.
Chapter 14. Graham. I should have been working instead of fucking around. My desk was piled with stacks of documents. There were at least 100 emails in my inbox that I needed to respond to. And here I was, writing to a 60-year-old advice columnist again. Dear Ida, the woman I've been seeing has recently expressed an interest in being tied up. I was wondering if you could provide some guidance for a first-time bondage novice. Would rope be a good investment, or do you suggest something along the lines of fur-lined handcuffs? Perhaps some silk ties that are less likely to leave marks on her wrists? I should note that I plan to bury my face in her tight little cunt, so there will be a good deal of tugging on the restraints while she is writhing on the bed from multiple orgasms. 50 Shades of Morgan, Manhattan. It only took 20 minutes for a response to appear in my inbox. I had expected a lengthy response full of her usual sarcasm. I should have known better than to think I could anticipate anything to do with Soraya Venedetta. Dear 50, might I suggest checking your partner's bedside nightstand? Perhaps since this woman you're seeing expressed an interest, she went shopping after lunch for some supplies. This woman was going to be the death of me. I just knew it. An hour later, my secretary buzzed in through the intercom. Mr. Morgan, you have a phone call on line 3. Didn't I ask not to be interrupted? Yes, but they said it was urgent. Who is it and what do they want? I didn't ask. Listen. What the hell was her name? Ellen? God damn it. The bulk of your job is to screen phone calls, am I correct? Yes. And would you consider interrupting me when I've asked not to be interrupted, without having the name of the caller, doing your job correctly? My patience was running thin. Find out the name of the caller and the nature of the so-called urgent matter. A minute later, the intercom buzzed again. What? It's a Ms. Moreau. She said to tell you the nature of her emergency is that her husband is dead. I picked up the phone. Genevieve? Graham, I need your help. I'm working on it. I told you that yesterday. I need more than that. I took off my glasses and tossed them on my desk. Scrubbing my hands over my face, I inhaled a deep breath. It had been years since I had a civil conversation with her. But contrary to popular belief, I wasn't a total prick. She had just lost her husband to a heart attack at the age of 31. Leaning back in my chair, I exhaled a breath of venom and sucked in fresh compassion. What can I do for you, Genevieve?
I don't want to run a company by myself. I can't do it.
Of course you can. You'll hire someone you can trust if it's overwhelming.
I trust you, Graham.
I used to fucking trust you, too. It was physically painful to bite my tongue. You're not in a state to discuss business right now.
I'm always in a state to discuss business. So are you. It's the one thing we have in common. Our emotions take a back seat to a deal.
I think you're wrong, and you're just unable to see that clearly right now. But what is it you think you'd like me to help with?
I want to merge with Morgan Financial Holdings.
You want me to buy Gainsworth Investments? As in, take it over completely?
No. Gainsworth Investments and Morgan Financial Holdings combined would be a powerhouse. I want to run it with you.
Excuse me?
You heard me right. I want to merge, be a team again.
Genevieve, I don't want to be tactless, but you just lost your husband. Don't you think you should take some time before seeking a new teammate? Grieve a little, perhaps? You're not thinking clearly.
She sighed. Liam and I were separated.
I wasn't aware.
I caught him fucking my 23-year-old assistant.
I'm sorry to hear that.
No, you're not. You're thinking what comes around goes around. I would be too.
Surprisingly, I actually wasn't. You still suffered a loss. Your daughter must need you right now. Let me finish freezing out shareholders from acquiring too much stock, and keep your leverage safe. We can discuss business after you've had time to think clearly.
That's Graham speak, for we'll have a conversation after I've already decided what I want.
Genevieve, go be with your family. Business can wait.
Fine, but check your calendar. You have an appointment this Friday with a Ms. Moore at 10. It'll say it's a referral from Bob Baxter. It's not. That's me. Moore? Morrow? I made the appointment 2 weeks ago. I was planning on coming to you about this anyway.
I'll see you at the service tonight, Genevieve.
After I hung up, I clicked on my calendar. Sure enough, there was an appointment for a new client consultation with a Ms. Moore on Friday. And it was noted as a referral from Bob Baxter. I had to hand it to her. Normally I would call someone who refers a new client, flush out some information on the referral. But Genevieve was smart. She knew there was no way I was calling Bob Baxter. There was no such thing as a 10-minute call with that man. He would have had me on the phone for 3 hours, and made it impossible to decline a dinner invitation before I hung up too. Unable to concentrate, I decided to go to the gym for a while. Running and lifting always helped me clear my mind. Around mile 3 on the treadmill, my head was still spinning. Flashes of my life were flickering through my mind rapidly. Soraya's eyes fluttering open this morning snuggled in my bed, smiling as she found me looking at her. Genevieve and I popping open a bottle of champagne in the office the night our asset management portfolio reached $1 billion for the first time. Soraya, kneeling, looking up at me as she slid that ball of silver around the head of my cock. Walking into Genevieve's office after arriving back early from a business trip, ready to celebrate another closed deal. Finding her kneeling, taking Liam's cock down her throat. I ran faster and faster, but the faster I went, the faster the flash just played in my head. Watching Tig's needle pierce my skin and the ink bleed over Genevieve's name. Liam and I, arm in arm, watching as they hung the first sign at our office 3 weeks after graduation. My mother. Frail, lying in the hospital bed trying to pretend she was fine. What the fuck? I ran faster. Soraya's feather tattoo, Genevieve sitting on the corner of my desk, Liam running next to me on the treadmill. I looked to my left. Fucking Liam was running next to me. The vision was so clear, for a heartbeat I really thought it was him. When I finally stopped, I had been running so fast, it took me a full 5 minutes to catch my breath. Leaning down with my hands on my knees as I panted, sweat dripping from everywhere. I squeezed my eyes shut. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Just when everything finally started to seem so simple, why did it suddenly feel complicated? I had no idea at the time, but the feeling was a premonition of things to come. I wasn't a huge drinker, never took drugs.
Sex was my only vice. And when I was stressed out, I needed it even more. Like a fiend. I knew I shouldn't have been thinking about fucking Soraya on the way to awake, but I couldn't help myself. She looked absolutely stunning in that little black dress. She'd done her hair up, even though I knew she didn't like it that way. She probably felt that she needed to hide the colored tips again. She looked nervous, too. Fuck me if that rare vulnerability she was exhibiting didn't make me want to screw her senseless even more. The divider separating us from the driver was completely closed, and that wasn't helping. The temptation to lift her onto my lap was getting stronger by the minute. She must have been reading my mind when she said, "You look like you want to attack me, Morgan. Would you lose respect for me if I told you that despite where we're headed tonight, all I can think about is slipping your panties off and letting you come on my face? I already know you're a dirty bastard, so that's not surprising. But this just might be a new low for you," she joked. "Something you'll figure out about me. When I'm under stress, I get particularly horny. Sex diverts my mind from whatever is bothering me. It's really the only thing that helps." "I see. Are you looking for my help, Mr. Morgan?" "Don't call me Mr. Morgan unless you're going for a submissive vibe, in which case I'll be more than happy to take you over my knee right now. We could play that game if you want." My thoughts trailed off as I became mesmerized by her slightly parted lips. "God, I want to fuck your mouth right now." She seemed to squirm in her seat. "Do you now?" "Yes, and go down on you. We can liken it to stress eating." She burst into laughter. "Glad you think it's funny, because I am 10 seconds from burying my face underneath that dress." "We can't. We're going to be at the funeral parlor any minute." My voice sounded thick and needy as I slid my hand underneath her dress, caressing her thigh. "Not if we agree to be late." "You're serious?" Instead of answering her, I picked up the phone to call my driver. "Louis, we're not quite ready to head to the funeral home. We'd like you to just drive around for a while. Circle back here in about 30 minutes. "No problem, Mr. Morgan." She bit her lip and shook her head in disbelief at me. And that made my dick swell even harder. I couldn't go to a wake with a hard-on, so this was an urgent matter anyway. Soraya's back was against the leather seat. Sliding the material of her dress up her thighs, I knelt beneath her and spread her knees apart. Slowly removing her lace thong with my teeth, I could feel the wetness on the material against my tongue. Fuck me. She was drenched. Her ass writhed under me as I wasted no time moving my tongue in a slow up-and-down motion over her pussy. I wasn't just using the tip, but rather the entire length of my tongue to devour her, stopping only long enough to suck on her clit. She'd never been this wet for me. Ever. Soraya ran her long fingernails through my hair and pulled. My mouth was covered in her arousal as I kept at it, before deciding that I couldn't take it anymore. Sticking my fingers inside of her, I moved them in and out as I looked up into her glazed-over eyes. "I really need to fuck you." "Yes, please," she muttered. Oh, I could definitely get used to Soraya Venedetta begging. Unzipping my trousers, I let them fall halfway down my legs before repositioning her so that she was on top. The leather was cold beneath me. Within seconds, she bore down on my cock, causing my eyes to roll back. Her dress was riding up her waist, her bare ass exposed as she rode me while I looked up into her eyes. The feeling of sinking into her had been just as incredible as I imagined it would be. I couldn't help pulling out the pins in her hair, undoing her updo, watching the tresses fall as she fucked me. Just like the night of the gala, she didn't protest. I knew she didn't want it up anyway. The other times we'd had sex seemed gentle in comparison to this town car experience. This was rougher. Carnal. Pure, unadulterated fucking at its best. When she let out a stifled moan, I came harder than I could ever remember coming. It felt so good to let out the tension that had been building all day. Nothing, not even my strenuous workout, had been able to soothe me like being inside of her had. Not only that, but Liam's death was a harsh and painful reminder of my own mortality, and a reminder of what was important. Life was simply too short not to fuck like this all of the damn time. "We're both a mess now," she said as she got off of me. "I swear to God, you've never looked more beautiful to me, Soraya." It was the truth. Her face was flushed, her hair a mess. Pure joy in the face of death. I was so grateful not to have to face this night alone. So grateful to be alive. She took out her compact and looked in the mirror. I went from looking like Princess Grace to Roseanne Rosanadonna. That made me chuckle. And I fucking love it. I had Lewis stop at Macy's so that Soraya could use the bathroom to fix her hair and buy some new panties. We were officially late to the wake. When we pulled up to the funeral home, my anxiety level was sky high again. Soraya now had her hair tied back into a low ponytail. She rubbed my back and said, "It'll be okay." Thank God she was here with me. Not only was it going to be difficult to see Liam's dead body, but it was the first time I'd have to come face to face with Genevieve in a very long time. But perhaps the most painful part was the fact that all of this reminded me of the last time I'd set foot in a funeral home. When my mother died. The line was out the door. A sea of black, stuffy polyester. Old, rich members of Manhattan's upper crust were discussing their stock portfolios when they should have just been shutting the fuck up. I couldn't see past the people in front of me. Not that I wanted to see anything in there. I wanted to go home, to my safe place inside Soraya. Having to take a leak like no one's business, I whispered in Soraya's ear, "Keep our place in line. I'm gonna find a bathroom." "Okay," she said, looking a bit wary of my leaving her alone. I left the line and followed the path of Persian rugs to the restroom. After I'd pissed like a racehorse, I was on my way back to Soraya when I spotted Liam's mother, Phyllis, comforting a little girl in the hallway. The child was crying, and it broke my heart. While the girl's back was turned to me, she seemed to be about 4 years old. She had to be Liam and Genevieve's daughter. I'd never seen her before. I'd only known that Liam knocked Genevieve up pretty soon after I found out about their affair. At the time, that news had only made things worse. But at this moment, I felt nothing but sympathy for a child who'd lost her parent. I knew that kind of pain all too well. Phyllis looked startled to see me, but I couldn't walk past her without paying my condolences. I felt nauseous as I said, "Hello, Phyllis. I'm so sorry about Liam." Looking distraught, she simply nodded and held the little girl tighter before walking away. I trailed behind them when I noticed a black pom-pom had fallen out of the girl's hair under the rug. Clearing my throat, I walked a bit faster to catch up with them. "Excuse me." She dropped something. When the girl turned around, it was the first time I'd gotten a look at her. Kneeling down and holding the pom-pom out, I'd forgotten what I was supposed to say next. The wind had been completely knocked out of me. There were no words, just a complete state of disbelief and confusion. Because if I didn't know better, I would have thought I was looking into the face of my mother.
Chapter 15. Soraya. What the hell was taking him so long? The line was moving faster than anticipated, and Graham had yet to return from the bathroom. It was now possible to see the open casket. How upsetting it was to witness such a young, handsome guy lying there dead. I knew he had wronged Graham, but Liam didn't deserve this. I could see that he had blonde hair and a handsome face. He looked so peaceful. I truly hoped he was in a better place. Loads of white floral bouquets surrounded his casket, with banners that read, "Son, Friend, Husband." There were long, cream-colored candles lit. It was a beautiful setup, the best that money could buy. I looked behind me. Still, no sign of Graham. My eyes then landed on her. Looking stoic, she was sitting in the seat closest to the casket. Genevieve. My body went rigid, an unexpected surge of possessiveness running through me. Like Liam, Genevieve also had blonde hair.
My boyfriend had been fucked over by Barbie and Ken, and I was more like the Bratz doll rebound. My boyfriend. I guess he was, wasn't he? Anyway, Genevieve was physically the opposite of me. Petite, with almost a ballerina's body. She was beautiful. While I hadn't expected anything less, I had hoped that maybe, by some chance, she would just be average-looking. Not the case. But it wasn't just her looks that gave me an upset stomach. It was more so coming face-to-face with someone whom Graham had given his heart to. He'd loved her. I wasn't sure that he'd ever feel the same about me. Perhaps I never realized how much I wanted or needed that until this moment. As she spoke to the people, giving their condolences, I looked at her eyes. Those were the eyes that used to gaze into Graham's. I looked at her mouth. That was the mouth that kissed his lips, sucked his cock. Then I looked down at her modest breasts hidden beneath a black sheath dress. My boobs were way bigger. That made me feel good for about a millisecond, until my eyes traveled down to her thin legs. Those had been wrapped around his back. Jesus, Soraya, stop torturing yourself. So this was what full-blown jealousy felt like. When I looked behind me again, the woman in back of me smiled. How did you know Liam? I didn't. I'm actually here with Graham Morgan. Genevieve's former fiancé. I swallowed the lump in my throat. Fiancé? If it's Graham Morgan of Morgan Financial Holdings, yes. They were engaged to be married before Genevieve and Liam got together. My stomach sank. He'd asked her to marry him. Right, of course. Yes, I'm with that, Graham Morgan, and you are? Helen Frost. I'm a neighbor of Genevieve and Liam's. I sometimes babysit Chloe. That's their daughter? Yes. She's 4. Beautiful, dark hair, unlike her parents. Well, that happens sometimes. I shrugged. Before our conversation could continue, my attention shifted toward the sight of Graham wading through the crowd toward me. He was staring blankly ahead, looking completely dazed. This whole experience was apparently even tougher on him than I thought. Are you okay? He nodded silently, but my gut told me that something was terribly wrong. It was finally our turn to kneel at Liam's casket and offer a prayer. Clasping my hands together, I closed my eyes and said one Our Father and one Hail Mary. My heart dropped when I heard the words that came out of Graham's mouth. You bastard, he whispered under his breath. His eyes were watery, but he didn't full-on cry. His lower lip trembled. I just continued to look at him, confused at his sudden anger. We both stood up in unison, slowly heading toward the not-so-grieving widow. Genevieve looked strangely okay for someone who'd just lost her husband. Her eyes seemed to brighten when she saw Graham. His body was stiff as she wrapped her arms around his neck and pulled him close. You bitch. Thank you so much for coming, Graham. Graham just stood there, staring at her. Had he gone mute from shock? She went on. I appreciate it more than you know. I'll see you Friday for our meeting. Meeting? She was going to see him? We were holding up the line, and he hadn't even introduced me. She finally peeled her eyes away from him long enough to notice me standing to his right. She flashed a fake smile. Who are you? I'm Soraya. Graham's... I hesitated. He finally spoke. Girlfriend, he said firmly as he placed his arm around my waist. Girlfriend, she repeated. Graham tightened his hold on me. Yes. Avery told me you were seeing someone new.
But I didn't realize it was serious.
It is. Very serious.
Well, okay then, good to know.
Well, it's very nice to meet you, Soraya.
Likewise. I'm so sorry for your loss.
And by that, I mean Graham.
Graham was giving her what looked like a death stare.
What the hell was going on? Why was he so angry all of a sudden?
He abruptly moved along to the next family member in line. We mechanically shook hands with every person in the lineup before reaching the end. Letting out a sigh of relief, I said,
"Well, that was painful. What do we do now?"
He looked like he wanted to say something, but couldn't find the words.
"Soraya."
"What? Graham, what's going on? Talk to me."
"I can't right now. I'll lose it on someone, and it's not the right time nor place."
It wasn't long before I got the answer to my question when all eyes in the room turned to a beautiful, dark-haired little girl appearing at Liam's coffin. Chloe. She'd been MIA all night. I'd assumed Liam and Genevieve's daughter was kept away intentionally. I didn't think she was here at all. The crowd seemed to still upon the heartbreaking sight of the girl weeping over her father's body. It made me feel guilty, because my father was still alive, and I chose to have nothing to do with him. Hers was dead, and she would never have the option to see him again.
"That's so sad," I whispered to Graham.
He took a deep breath in and slowly let it out. Almost at the same moment, Chloe turned around, allowing me the first look at her face. I literally gasped, out loud. The wheels in my head started turning. When I looked over at him, he was staring at her with a look of disbelief.
"Had you never seen her before, Graham?"
His eyes were still planted on her when he shook his head and simply said,
"No."
Suddenly, Graham's strange behavior made total sense, because this little girl looked just like her father. Her father, Graham. There was no doubt in my mind. Graham was Chloe's biological father. My mind was racing.
How could this have happened?
How could they have not told him? Was it even possible that this could have been a coincidence? That she looked just like Graham, even though she was Liam's?
In my heart, I knew the answer.
Suddenly, I didn't know if I wanted to cry or punch someone out. He tugged at my arm.
"We need to leave. Before I do something here, I'm going to regret."
I looked over toward Genevieve, who was oblivious to Graham's impending nervous breakdown as she chatted and flashed her perfect white teeth at the people in line.
Okay, let's go," I said.
Back in the town car, Graham stared blankly out the window for the first 10 minutes of the ride. Presumably still in shock, he didn't seem ready to talk about what we'd just witnessed, and I didn't want to push it. He finally turned to me.
"Tell me that was just my imagination."
"No, it wasn't. That little girl looked just like you."
He blinked repeatedly, still trying to process.
"If she's my daughter, how could Genevieve have known all this time and not told me?"
"I wish I had an answer, but I don't. I guess you're gonna have to ask her."
Rubbing his temples, he said,
"I have to think this through."
"I understand if you want to be alone tonight."
"No,"
he said emphatically.
"I need you with me."
"Okay."
That evening, there was no sex. Instead, Graham just held me, the enormous weight of his worry evident with each and every breath he took as he stayed awake, unable to sleep most of the night. It seemed like the fun, carefree days of our relationship had come to an abrupt end tonight. Things were going to change in a very drastic way. As much as I wanted to be there for him, I couldn't help the fact that part of me was secretly putting on an imaginary suit of armor to protect myself. Graham had decided that he wouldn't confront Genevieve until their meeting on Friday.
He figured he'd give her time to properly bury Liam before going on the attack about Chloe. I think he also needed the time to prepare for the inevitable truth, as well as determine what his legal rights were. He was also bogged down with work, still trying to strategize on the takeover of Liam's company. I decided that a couple of nights off from each other would be a good idea under the circumstances. Much to his dismay, I intentionally made plans with Tig and Delia two nights in a row, and told him I'd be sleeping at my own apartment. Truthfully, there were no plans, other than just hanging out at the tattoo parlor. I really needed my friend's opinion on this situation. They couldn't believe the story. Delia was organizing her disposable piercing needles as she spoke. This sounds like something out of General Hospital. I had to bite my tongue. They had no clue of the irony in that statement. I had never mentioned that Graham watched it. Tig had his feet up as he put out his cigarette and cracked,
"More like all my children, if you get what I mean."
"Thanks a lot," I rolled my eyes. He continued,
"What I don't get is how this guy never considered the possibility that that kid was his."
"He'd never seen her."
"But he'd heard about the pregnancy, right? Couldn't he have done the math? It didn't dawn on him that it was at least possible?"
Feeling the need to defend Graham, I said, "They had stopped speaking. He didn't know the exact timing. He just assumed it was Liam's." Tig lit another cigarette.
"That's some crazy shit. You wake up one day and boom, instant family."
His words made me shudder. Tig had just articulated my absolute worst fear. Delia knew I was upset when she turned to her husband. "Don't say that. He's not with that chick. They're not his family." "Believe me, it's not like I haven't thought that very same thing," I said. "Not only was he once in love with her, but there's no other man in the picture anymore, and she's likely the mother of his child. Where exactly do I fit into this?" Delia tried her best to talk me off the ledge. "You're jumping way ahead of things. He's not going to want to be with her, especially after knowing she lied to him for years." I sighed. "This woman is beautiful and cunning. I bet she's already trying to figure out how to make this situation work to her benefit. She'd scheduled a meeting with him to talk business even before he found out about Chloe at the funeral. She wants to merge Liam's company with Graham's."
"I bet she wants to merge a lot more than that," Tig cracked.
Delia walked over to Tig and shook him playfully. "Will you stop?" She looked at me. "Graham seems to really care about you. I have a hard time believing he's going to fall for her crap." Tig interjected.
"I have a hard time picturing Soraya acting all Mary Poppins and shit with this kid. You have to look at the big picture here. Even if Mr. Big Prick doesn't end up with the girl's mother, Soraya still has to deal with raising someone else's kid if she stays with this guy. That alone is something to consider."
He was right. There were so many different layers to this problem. "Soraya would be a good stepmother. We could dye the little girl's tips and pierce her ears," Delia smiled. Tig blew out a huge waft of smoke.
"You know what I think? I think you should bid Daddy Warbucks and Little Orphan Annie adieu. That's just my opinion."
That night, I'd finally changed the color of my tips again. They'd been green since the night of the gala. There was only one color that seemed to fit the current situation. Code Red.
Chapter 16. Graham. It felt like Soraya was slipping away from me. The excuse she gave me about hanging out with her friends was a load of bullshit. The worst part was that I couldn't even say I blamed her. Imagine if the situation were reversed. How would I have handled it, knowing that she'd given birth to another man's baby? That thought made me sick to my stomach. I felt so possessive over her, I just couldn't imagine it. This week had been like a nightmare I couldn't wake up from.
All I wanted was to go back to the way things were before the wake. Everything was so simple then. I had so much work to get done but couldn't stop thinking about the two females infiltrating my mind. Soraya and Chloe. If she really was my daughter, then I owed her so much. None of this was her fault. Don't get ahead of yourself. I needed that paternity test. There was still a part of me that wouldn't believe it until I had proof. I couldn't allow myself to get emotionally invested until there was no doubt that she was mine. My secretary's voice interrupted my thoughts. Ms. Moreau is here to see you? Clicking my watch, I took a deep breath and said, Send her in. The door opened and Genevieve strutted into my office like she owned the place. There was a time when she practically did. She, Liam, and I would spend hours strategizing in this very office until the wee hours of the morning. She'd given me endless blowjobs under the very desk she now sat in front of with her legs crossed. It seemed just like yesterday, except for the fact that my previous love for her had turned into what felt like hate. She placed a white box on my desk. I brought you your favorite cupcake from Magnolia. Peanut butter. I remember how much you... Fuck. Shut up about the cupcake, I spewed. Is she mine? So much for a gradual lead-in to the discussion. Her eyes widened. What? You heard me. Chloe, is she my daughter? She looked absolutely shocked as her cheeks turned red. How could she not have seen this confrontation coming? When she didn't speak, I continued, Why do you look so surprised, Genevieve? Did you really think I was going to see her at the wake and not ask you that very question? I don't know, Graham. What do you mean you don't know? I've been dreading this moment for 5 years. I don't know how to possibly explain my thinking to you in a way that you'll understand. Well, I have all damn day. Figure it out. When she continued to be silent, I said, All right, I'll start then. You were fucking Liam and me at the same time, correct? Yes. How long after we were last together did you find out you were pregnant? A month. How far along were you? 2 months. I threw a pen across the room in anger. How the fuck could you do this? Spit had flown out of my mouth as I said it. Tears started to form in her eyes. Can you try to let me explain? I'm looking forward to watching you try to explain your way out of this, in fact. She closed her eyes for a moment, then said, I was in love with both of you, Graham. I truly was. It was selfish of me to feel entitled to that, but I did. I wanted it to go on forever. Being with both of you was the best of both worlds. I knew that once you found out, that would be it. I'd told Liam that you and I had stopped sleeping together. He didn't know that I'd been with both of you at the same time. Apparently, you never told him otherwise. I barely spoke to either one of you after I caught you. I know. I'm quite aware. It still breaks my heart to this day. She gazed out the window for what seemed like minutes to gather her thoughts. Then she finally spoke again. When Chloe was born, her complexion was lighter than it is now. She didn't have much hair. It wasn't immediately evident that she didn't look like either Liam or me. As she became a toddler, I knew he was noticing how much she looked like you. He chose to ignore it. We both chose to ignore it. Things were so bad between the three of us at that time. And Liam loved Chloe more than life. He couldn't have faced the possibility that she wasn't really his. What about me? Did you think I would never find out? Deep down, I always felt she was yours. And to be honest, that made me happy. Things between Liam and me went sour pretty fast after we were married. I realized that I'd made a huge mistake. I still loved you so much and will always deeply regret hurting you. Again, I still don't understand how you could have kept this from me. I don't have an excuse, except to say that I didn't want to disrupt Chloe's life. And a part of me felt like I couldn't do that to Liam. Staying with him was the lesser of two evils because I knew you wouldn't ever take me back. So I let things be the way they were. I was just trying to keep the peace. More tears fell from her eyes. I refused to soften. I want a paternity test immediately. I'm not going to fight you on that, Graham. I'll give you whatever you want. Time with her, the test. All that I ask is that if it turns out you're the father, Please wait to tell her until she's a little older and can understand better. She's just lost the only father she's ever known, and she's devastated.
I would never do anything to harm her. I'm fine with not telling her for a while if that's in her best interest.
I really do care about you. I never meant to hurt you. Please believe that.
I want that test within a week, Genevieve. I'll make the arrangements so that I can be sure the results are accurate. A look of panic suddenly washed over her face.
You're not going to try to take her away from me, are you?
I would never take a child away from its mother. Genevieve sniffled.
Thank you.
If it turns out she's mine, I want you to gather every single picture you have ever taken of her since the day she was born. Do you understand me? She didn't hesitate.
Of course.
That night all I wanted was to see Soraya, smell Soraya, sleep next to Soraya. My body felt like it was withdrawing from the strongest kind of drug. It had only been a few days without her, but it felt like a lifetime. It wasn't just the physical need. I missed her humor, her sarcasm, her laugh. It was late. I had just left the hospital from visiting Mimi, and I wasn't sure if Soraya would even still be up. My driver, Lewis, had the rest of the night off. Without thinking, I grabbed my jacket and headed down to the garage. I hadn't texted or called her first, so driving to her place was a risk. But I couldn't chance her telling me not to come. There was no parking near her apartment, so I had to walk 2 blocks in the pouring rain. When I finally got to her door, I pressed the buzzer to her apartment. She sounded groggy.
Hello?
I closed my eyes because I'd missed her voice. Baby, it's me.
Graham, it's late.
I leaned my forehead against the wall. I know. Without saying anything further, she buzzed me in. Relief washed over me as I walked swiftly up the stairs, 2 at a time. My hair and jacket were soaked. I must have looked like a drowned rat. When she opened the door, she didn't immediately let me in. I didn't know whether she was going to kick me out or tell me to come inside. It was her call to make. I had no right to push after the mess I'd just brought her into. I took her in for a moment. She was completely unmade up in a thin white nightshirt. Her nipples were saluting me. At least they were happy to see me. She looked so gorgeous, even with her hair a matted mess. The tips were red. I was losing her.
Oh, God, come in, you're soaked.
Thank fuck for the rain. I wasn't above taking sympathy at this point. She closed the door and disappeared for a moment, then came back with a towel.
Here, give me that wet jacket.
I peeled off the top layer. My dress shirt underneath it was still dry. I should have stood outside for a while longer.
What's going on? Is everything okay?
No. Everything isn't okay.
I take it your meeting with Genevieve didn't go well today?
She admitted she wasn't sure that Liam was Chloe's father. She was fucking both of us at the same time and realized after we broke up that she was pregnant. She agreed to get Chloe DNA tested within the next week.
I don't know what to say.
I looked into her eyes. Say you won't leave me. She looked away.
Graham, everything is so uncertain right now. I'm so confused.
I feel the same way. My mind is spinning out of control, and there is only one thing I'm sure of right now. Do you know what that is, Soraya? She was staring at the ground, but lifted her eyes, looking up at me through her dark eyelashes.
What?
I want you. I want to be with you. I'm head over fucking ass about you, and I need to know you aren't going to leave me. She cracked a small smile.
I think the saying is head over heels about you.
Whatever. I wrapped my hands around her waist and locked them behind her back. Tell me you aren't going to leave me over this.
We don't know what's going to happen.
I know what I want.
Graham, things can change.
I need you, Soraya. I've never said that to another woman in my life. I leaned my forehead against her and whispered, I need you. She nodded.
Okay.
Taking her face in my hands, I lifted it so our eyes met. No more bullshit avoiding me.
I had plans with Tig and Delia.
I flashed her a look that called bullshit.
Fine, she rolled her eyes. I was avoiding you. I leaned in and kissed her on the lips. For the first time since the funeral, the world seemed to stop spinning for a moment. Do you want to stay tonight? Try to get me to leave. That night, with my body wrapped around Soraya, I finally got some much-needed sleep. I'd even slept in late the next morning until the sound of my phone ringing woke me up.
Chapter 17. Soraya. I knew who it was from the tone in his voice. Luckily, I was facing away from him, so I could listen to the whole conversation without having to pretend it didn't cut deep into me. It was bad enough another woman was calling his cell at 7 a.m. while he was lying in my bed, but the mother of his child was another thing altogether. Is this how it would be? Graham was not the type of man who would ever ignore a phone call if the woman who had custody of his child was calling. This bitch, who had screwed him out of years of watching his daughter grow up, could now interrupt his life at any given time of day. I had no doubt that she would use it to her fullest advantage, too.
I'll make arrangements for a private lab to come to your home Monday at 10.
He was quiet as he listened. I heard the sound of her voice, but couldn't make out the words. There were a few more curt exchanges, and then right before he hung up, his voice softened.
How is she doing?
My heart ached for him. After, I kept quiet for a few minutes, giving him some time. When I finally spoke, my back was still to him. You okay? Graham hugged me from behind and kissed my shoulder.
I'm good. Sorry about that. She was calling to make arrangements for the DNA test.
I turned over and faced him. She's still in love with you. He looked down.
I'm not sure Genevieve is capable of love.
She's beautiful.
She doesn't hold a candle to you.
She's smart.
I'm more of a smart-ass kind of guy.
That made me smile. Until I thought of other things that Genevieve beat me in. She was your fiancé.
Without commitment, it's merely a piece of jewelry.
I have no idea where it came from. My dark masochist side, I suppose. Did you get down on one knee and propose?
Soraya.
I need to know.
Why?
I have no idea, I just do.
I didn't, actually. It was more of a business deal than anything romantic. I took her to Tiffany's, and she picked out her own ring.
Oh.
When we split up, Mimi didn't seem too surprised. One day, over lunch, she asked me why I hadn't given Genevieve her engagement ring. The thought had never even occurred to me, to be honest. Mimi had given me her ring when I turned 21, and told me that it belonged to whomever I eventually gave my heart to. My grandmother's ring was small and simple. It wasn't until the relationship had ended and Mimi had pointed out the obvious to me that I understood the significance. There was never a question in my mind, given the choice between a small ring that meant a lot to me and a flashy rock. Genevieve would rather have had that rock. And I knew that enough to not give her my grandmother's ring. But I didn't stop to think about what that said about who she was.
Wow. She sounds like a real fucking bitch. Graham laughed. It was good to hear it.
That's what I love about you, Soraya. You call it like you see it. The first time you did it to me, I was pissed, but also hard as a rock.
I wrapped my hands around his neck and gave him a dirty grin. You're a stuck-up suit who can't even remember his secretary's name. Graham squinted, and then quickly caught on. His lips went to my neck.
Go on.
Most of the time, you don't even notice the people around you.
Is that so?
His voice was gravelly, and his mouth nibbled its way up to my ear. You think women should just spread their legs for you because of what you look like? His hand caressed its way down my body, landing on my bare thigh. He spoke directly into my ear as he nudged my legs open.
Spread your legs for me, Soraya.
I tried not to. I really did, but that voice.
Spread for me, Soraya. I need to hear you moan my name.
You're so confident you can... He lowered his body down the bed, settling his shoulders between my legs. I was already wet, and his warm breath right there shot fire through my body. I quickly spread my legs. By afternoon, all the confidence in our relationship that this morning had instilled was already starting to dissipate. Ida had me running errands for her since lunchtime. In line at the bank, the man in front of me was with his daughter. She was probably around the same age as Chloe. Sitting on the 7 train on my way to the printer, a couple was seated across from me. Their daughter was holding onto the pole, spinning around and around. It probably wasn't a profound moment for them, but for me, I saw a happy family. Reminders were everywhere I looked. After my last errand for the day, I was standing on the platform waiting for my southbound train to arrive. Across the track, the northbound 7 arrived. The word next to the circled 7 caught my attention. Queens. Without thinking, I hopped on just as the doors slid closed. What the hell was I doing? I hadn't seen him in 8 years. For all I know, he might not even live in Queens anymore. When I exited at the 61st Street station, a northbound train was pulling up. Looking across, I considered going back where I just came from. I thought about it for so long that eventually people had to walk around me while I stood frozen in place watching the train pull away. His house was only about 8 blocks from the station. Around the 3rd block, my phone buzzed, and Graham's name flashed on the screen. My finger lingered over the decline button, but then I remembered what I told him last night. I would be there for him. I wouldn't avoid him anymore. Hey.
Hey, gorgeous. How was your day?
I was standing at the crosswalk waiting for a light to turn green. Busy. Ida had me running all around the city doing errands. Just then, the light turned and I stepped off of the curb. Out of nowhere, a cab pulled up in front of me less than an inch from my toes. I banged on the trunk of the yellow car.
Hey, asshole, watch where you're going!
Soraya?
Yeah, sorry, a cabbie almost just ran over my foot.
You're still in Manhattan?
Actually, no.
Oh, good, I just finished a meeting in Brooklyn. Where are you? I'll pick you up and we can grab some dinner?
I was quiet for a minute. I'm not in Brooklyn.
Where are you?
Queens.
Oh, I didn't realize you were still doing errands.
I'm not, actually. I swallowed. I'm going to see my father. Graham didn't ask me why I was going. The reason was pretty obvious. We talked for the rest of the walk, and I told him I'd text him when I was done so that we could have dinner. When I hung up, I stopped in my tracks, realizing my father's house was only 2 doors down. What was I coming to say? I had no sense of time as I stood there, but it must have been at least a half hour that I stared at his home. My emotions were completely out of control, and I seriously had no idea what the hell I was going to say, yet I was sure I needed to do this. Fuck it. I walked to his doorstep, took a deep breath, and knocked. My heart was racing as I waited. When no one came to the door, at first, a sense of relief came over me. I was just about to turn and leave when the door opened.
Can I help you?
Teresa squinted. And then her eyes grew wide.
Oh, my! Soraya, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you.
I forced a smile. Is my dad here? I was suddenly panicked and wanted nothing more than to leave. Please say no. Please say no.
Yes, he's upstairs, fighting with the closet door that came off the hinge. I think he's losing.
She smiled warmly and stepped inside.
Come in, I'll go up and get him. He's going to be so excited you're here.
I stayed just inside the doorway, No different than how I would have felt entering a stranger's house for the first time. It's what he essentially was. A stranger. The walls were lined with family.